My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. And this show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my good guests. And my guest today is Masamitsu Ishibashi, who is the president and CEO of Misaki Megumi Suisan, based in Japan. And founded in 1986, the company has been focused on processing and sales of fresh seafood, in particular tuna. Tuna, or maguro in Japanese, is one of the most popular fish among sushi lovers. And not only that, the fish has a very special place in Japanese food culture. On the other hand, sustainability is a major issue nowadays, and seafood, including maguro, is one of the most frequently discussed areas. And Masamitsu is devoted to educate people around the world about the precious taste and flavors of maguro, and at the same time, he aims to become the most sustainable maguro purveyor in the world. So today we'll discuss how important maguro is in Japanese food culture, characteristics of different parts of maguro, how Masamitsu exercises sustainability, and much, much more. But before we start, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, whichever list you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Masamitsu Ishibashi. Hello, Masamitsu-san. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning from Japan.
Yeah, it's very early in the morning, and because we are in the business, I'm sure it's kind of
right.
So first of all, let's get to know you. So where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay, thank you. I'm from Jogashima Island, where it's located in the tip of Miura Peninsula. Jogashima Island is connected by a bridge, so it is actually like small local town, but it takes like in our 1 or 2 hours to Tokyo by driving. It's local good place, but not so far from Tokyo, so it's kind of convenient. So when I was kids, I think I ate a lot of seafood, so I was bored of eating seafood at the time. So I preferred meat at the time, for sure. Now I like fish. So I realized my parents were busy when I found maguro at dinner time. So it's good time.
Right. Well, you didn't realize how luxurious your food, the diet was.
Right. But it's common food in Japan, in my town at the time. Everybody, I think, ate seafood, especially like maguro.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of Japanese food. Whatever is available, you eat at the best condition. That's the spirit of Japanese cuisine. So, all right. So, and then you went to UC San Diego in 2001 to study. So, what did you study there?
Okay. Actually, I graduated from Aoyama Gakuin University in Tokyo, and I studied the system engineering there. After graduating from university, I went to San Diego to study English and marketing for about maybe like 18 months or something. So actually, I studied surfing more than marketing in San Diego. I was so surf boy, and so I was a really good experience and a good time for me in San Diego. I studied a lot there.
Okay. So you experienced two different kinds of oceans.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk about your business. So your father, Yukio Ishibashi, started Misaki Megumi Suisan in 1968. And I heard by selling tuna by himself with just one truck, and eventually founded the company in 1986. So what is the scope of Misaki Megumi Suisan's business?
Scope is, Let me see.
I mean, of course, selling, processing maguro, but yeah, it's a, well, basically it surrounds tuna, but you have some other elements expanding mm-hmm. from the fish processing and the sales business. And I also heard the company runs some restaurants as well to offer the best kind of seafood. So your the business, scope of the business is really all about fish, local fish that captured in your where you grew up. And then there's a lot of seafood, but tuna.
Okay, let me see. Let's copy it. Okay, my father started maguro business when he was like early 20s. So it was actually before I was born. So Misaki is one of the famous maguro ports for maguro. At that time, there were so many maguro wholesale companies in Misaki. So I think it's not so difficult to start up maguro business in Misaki.
Mm.
So the main customers at that time in Misaki area were all fish markets in Japan, including the Tsukiji.
Mm.
But from that time, Misaki Megumi style is like a port to table. I mean, we had distributed maguro to restaurants, hotel, sushi bars, I mean, directly to users. Now we have a lot of direct customers all over the world. So we have been doing port to table style that we have been doing since Misaki Megumi startup. So that's our scope or something, yeah.
Mm, well, so you mean directly, meaning if I wanted to have your tuna, I can order? Mm.
Yes, we have our website. We have B2C business as well. So our style is the company to direct users.
Oh, wow. I have to look up the website detail. I didn't notice that the B2C business to consumers, which includes myself. Okay, so I'll be prepared. I'm going to order some tuna. It's shipped to New York.
Nice.
Right. Okay. And then, but, you know, just quickly go back to, you know, you yourself. So you studied engineering at the college, you said, but why did you decide to succeed the family business?
Oh, that's a big question. Actually, I started my career with an advertising agency after coming back to Japan. So at that time, I didn't think I would succeed in the family business. So I worked at an advertising agency for 3 years. Then I changed jobs to F&B business. After 1 year experience in the F&B, I joined the Misaki Megumi.
What would you mean by food and beverage? Food and beverage business?
Yes, right. Okay. Restaurant business, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. So should be destiny or something. So usually people who succeed in the fish family business in Japan should have experience in working at the market or some big fish company before they would join. But I do not have such experience, but I have other experience like studying in USA, work in the completely different industry. So I think that may makes me push to another way. So actually some of my coworker when I work in the restaurant business joined my company, and one of them works in the Singapore right now. So good experience, good, you know, chance.
Right. Wow. Interesting. I mean, especially like, you know, your father's business based on products, and now you have this marketing mindset from studying at college abroad, as well as your advertising agency experience, right? So, and a network. So, yeah. Right. Okay. So, so by the way, you mentioned Misaki is a very special place. So Misaki Maguro or tuna from the Misaki fishing port is kind of brand name. So what is special about Misaki fishing port?
Okay, right. The special point of the Misaki Maguro is super frozen. So this is kind of confusing, but Misaki Maguro is not caught around the Misaki port. So Misaki port is the base port of the deep sea fisheries. So usually like deep sea fisheries go far from port to catch tunas. So it usually takes at least like 3 months. In the longest, it takes a year or more. So all Maguro ships in Misaki port have a super freeze unit, which is minus 60 quick freezer. So as soon as they catch Maguro, they take off all blood, guts, and gills on the ship and put them into the minus 60 quick freezer. So this system can make all ships go all over the world to catch Maguro with good freshness. For Maguro, the catching season is the most important. So cold water would make Maguro more fat to protect its cold temperature. So ships usually go up to north and down to south, heading to winter cold. So you can say Misaki Maguro is always in season. So it's shun in Japanese. So also in Japan, no, in Misaki, grading skill is a special technique. So we can tell the quality from the slice of tail. So from the tail slice, so we can know its freshness, color, and fat content. So this grading skill is very important for Maguro business. Mm-hmm. Currently, in Misaki, there are more than 100 Maguro companies, and everybody has a special grading skill. So it is called Mekiki in Japanese. So I think it goes to a good Maguro brand in Misaki.
Right. Okay. Wow. That's amazing, right? So this modern technology of fishing is that you can just freeze fish right away to minus 60 centigrade. So, yeah. Right. It's amazing. And also it's not kind of surprising how much tuna or maguro can fetch at the fish market, including Toyosu, which is former Tsukiji market. So, okay. So, so now you deal with the best of the best tuna. And also tuna is, maguro also in Japanese, is very important food in Japan. So could you tell us the history of eating tuna in Japan?
Okay. So for Japanese, tuna is a very, very special food for sure. So it is gochiso in Japanese. So we do find maguro in like a New Year day or birthday, anniversary, and a special occasion day. So actually maguro history in Japan, it's not so long. I think less than 100 years. So in Edo era, almost 200 years ago, toro usually go to the garbage because of less freshness. So with the development of cold chain, so eating maguro became more common in the 1950s to 1960s. Mm. So many maguro ships were built at that time. So they went to save the ocean to catch a good quality maguro. So almost all maguro came to Misaki port and distributed to all of Japan with our Mekiki skill. So it has become a popular food for Japanese people right now. So you can see a lot of maguro at the supermarket, convenience sushi restaurant, and the casual restaurant. Yeah.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. Now it's a so common food.
Right. I looked up also, and then tuna was... This started to be eaten 10,000 years ago. And of course, there's no refrigeration back then. So it was locally eaten and it is a huge fish. So once you catch it, you have to consume the whole thing, which is impossible probably. And of course, the tuna started to be popular if you put it as a sushi, which is, sushi was born in front of Tokyo Bay, meaning you can have that fresh fish and put it on top of sushi rice. That was the beginning of sushi as fast food. So, but you said, because thanks to the refrigeration system that's being developed, we started to eat more tuna or maguro. And then now it's global. So it's just amazing. Technology really helped us to realize how delicious tuna is. Right. Okay, so, but what do you think about... tuna became very important. And how important, it's important part, but is that because of the supply? It's always available throughout the country? Is that why it remains popular in Japan?
Okay. In 1950s, so Japan needs more protein because of high population growth and economic growth as well. So I think this is one of the reasons that Maguro industry developed. So as the industry developed, the price were going down, and then Maguro is getting be more common food in Japan. So I'm afraid it is to come out right now, but I believe Maguro must be Gosho food. And
feast, like treat.
Right. So it has become common food for Japanese right now. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, we will take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into Masamit's efforts to become most sustainable tuna purveyor in the world. So please stay with us.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough, and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Masamitsu Ishibashi, who is the president and CEO of Misaki Megumi Suisan, based in Japan. And founded in 1986, the company has been focused on processing the sales of fresh seafood, in particular tuna. So there are various types of tuna. And could you tell us the popular type of tuna, such as bluefin and yellowfin and all those, and differences among them?
Mm-hmm, sure. So actually, like Maguro mainly has five types, bluefin, southern bluefin, big eye, yellowfin, and the albacore. So bluefin would become the biggest one at like 1,000 pounds, and has the potential to have the best toro. So when you catch bluefin in the cold water, like wintertime, in the North Atlantic Ocean, around the island, North Japan, or in fall, around the Boston and the New York, it should have the best toro quality. And also, like farming, it became popular in Japan and the Mediterranean and the Mexico. So once they catch bluefin, they put them into the cage and feed them. Southern bluefin is a completely different species from northern bluefin. So they would be in south between like Australia and South Africa. So it has a good toro as well. So bluefin has a little bit sour taste, but southern bluefin has a little bit sweet taste. So those like five types, tuna is a completely different type.
Interesting. So, well, I think this is my guess, but what's the best tuna you think? It's like a fatter? The fat content is higher?
Yeah, but it's up to you. For me, it's like the Akami, lean part is my favorite. So, but some people like toro, the fatty part. So it's up to you. Also, like people ask me like which one is the best. So I think I can answer like the shun, the in-season maguro is the best, not only the type.
More flavors.
Yes.
Okay, right. Yeah, because I think the most expensive piece, if you go to a sushi restaurant, toro, otoro, and chutoro, they are the highest priced, and I tend to save it till the end. So, yeah, that kind of fattiness is something very special. But, yeah, if you are, you know, the connoisseur, like, tsu in Japanese, A lot of people like akami, like red part that you like, you are. So, right. Okay. Well, that's interesting that you said the five types of tuna, like the bluefin and the southern bluefin, big eye, yellowfin, albacore. So that's like different. It's like albacore tend to be processed for canned products. Or I think the, you know, the southern bluefin, it's also very expensive as almost like bluefin and they use for sashimi, right? So, yeah, but, well, it's really hard to say. It's interesting that you said some meat can be sweeter depending on where it's from. Does it come from what they eat?
I think so, yeah, up to the feeding, right? Feeding or like a bait.
Right. Is there any, like, this area's tuna tend to be sweeter or like this one is more kind of austere, like more kind of meaty?
For example, like if the fish eat like a shrimp or a crab or something, the red color is more like a lean. More like a red.
Interesting. Right. And also I'm sure that kind of flavor is reflected in their meat as well. Right. Okay. And also you're really interesting because I had a guest, Nick Sakagami, who was helping, working on the farmed tuna. And then he said that farming tuna is very difficult because it's, you know, they get too energetic in a cage, kind of like a huge, contained area, so they bump into the wall and kill themselves. So that kind of thing is a very difficult fish to farm. But you said it's becoming more popular now.
I think it's popular right now.
Right.
So I think it's difficult, but it's popular.
Right. So it's a worth investment, I guess.
Right.
Okay. So what's the difference though between farmed fish and the wild fish? Do you see any different taste or flavors?
So I think like the farmed one is more fatty and wild one is more like a wild taste.
Right, like everything else.
Right.
Right. So like, chicken or beef. But also it's also depending on what kind of texture, taste you like grass-fed beef or grain-finished beef, that kind of thing. So it's not that which one is better, right? It comes to taste.
Right, right.
Okay. Right. So when your sushi chef says this is a farmed fish, tuna from Spain, and then this is a wild tuna from Boston, it can be, you could love wild one or the farmed one, depending on who you are. Right.
Right.
Okay. And so tuna is one of the most essential ingredients of sushi. And we see the different parts of tuna on the menu, like, you know, akami, chutoro, and otoro. So for listeners who are not totally familiar with this kind of different parts, could you tell us the differences between these different parts of tuna?
So actually, like, the red part is the center of maguro. So almost we call the akami, which means the red part. So usually like a center of maguro. So chutoro is like just under the skin, so with a little bit of fat. So chutoro is means like a middle fat or something. So and otoro is a belly part of the tunas, the most like a fattest part in the maguro. But otoro is only like a 50% from whole body, so it's so rare. That's why the price is expensive.
Right. But the truth is that, well, it's hard to believe, but that otoro, those most precious and expensive part, used to be thrown away in Japan because Japanese people were not used to eat fatty food until the Western food came to Japan in the 19th century. So also without refrigeration, you know, fatty pieces tend to be more kind of perishable. So we used to throw away all kind of gold into the ocean, right? Okay, so, and also I think, you know, just because otoro, the fattier part is more expensive, it doesn't mean that it's better. Because to me personally, for example, I like chutoro as the balance between the best part of fat and like a meatiness of a kami. And and also, I don't know why you like a kami, but to me, that kind of bloody, you know, medium rare or rare beef, the kind of bloodiness, that's really kind of appeals to your appetite. And one time I paired a kami with Gamay, wine, you know, for the Beaujolais kind of grape, then that had the same common bloodiness. And it was a surprise that combination of wine and a kami, they can go very well together too. So the tuna is a very interesting fish.
Nice.
Right. Okay. And on your website, you also sell rare parts of tuna, like unusual parts, such as kamatoro or haramo, hohoniku. Like, could you tell us those unusual parts and why we should eat them?
Okay. So I think we can eat the whole maguro. There is no part that you put in the garbage. So kamatoro is a very, very rare part. It is tip of the belly part. So I think like less than 3% from the whole body. So it's rare. So it is good fat part, but it's something chewy. So it is good for aburi with a burner or like a hot pot or something. So anyway, it's the grilling part. So cheek part is also good part, good and rare. So it looks like a beef meat. It's good for grilling or a steak or a karage or something. So one of my chef friends makes a ramen soup from maguro bones. A restaurant in my town makes a maguro head grill. So many tourists come to eat head grill. So there are so many maguro. This is depending on the parts. Please visit my town to eat a special maguro dishes. It must be fun. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, because we on a sushi plate, we only have the imagination of one tiny piece, but maguro is huge. Like you said, like it could be 1,000 kilograms. So, right. So maguro head could be like a giant, and it must be very dramatic. And right. Yeah. And also you sell heart and stomach.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. Well, that sounds really interesting and tasty. So how do you cook them?
Grilling is the best one, but if the heart is fresh, you can eat by sashimi with the garlic or you know, ginger.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I like chicken heart. I'd imagine it's kind of nicely fatty and tender. Right. Okay. So, all right. So, in your statement on Misaki Suisan's website, you differentiate tuna and maguro. So what is the difference between the two?
Okay, so this is my kind of my word and my definition, but the first difference is the quality for sashimi or sushi. Maguro must have a good freshness, good quality, good sustainability, anything good. So, and catching skill, good preservation, and good mekiki are necessary for maguro. So on the other hand, tuna is not sashimi grade quality, not freshness, so not like sustainability. So we would like to distribute better one to everybody. So I say maguro and tuna is different. So technically, like pulling, long line fisheries, and super frozen preservation should be maguro. But processing and the slow freezing must be tuna because of less freshness.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I happened to interview like 10 sushi chefs lately for an article, and they all Japanese chefs who grew up with traditional Japanese caught fish, they said, well, local fish is amazing, and they only wish how the fish is treated in the same way as they are in Japan, the fish market would thrive with local fish, because that's the thing. It's, even if it's the pristine, amazing fish, it's like completely, it's like abundant compared to Japanese, like just born newborn baby. They're so spoiled from the ocean to your table. So I think that there's a lot to improve in terms of distribution from the moment the fish is caught to get to your table outside Japan. And I know a lot of Japanese chefs wants to change that. And they're even willing to educate local fishermen, but it's just not easy and it costs a lot of money. So it's really frustrating because knowing some Boston tuna is caught, but then shipped to Japan to get to the best, most well-selling like Toyosu market to get the highest price. And they go back to American market kind of thing. Yeah. So so the point is how the quality is achieved. It's almost like obsession, right? Japanese way to catch tuna process and then just brought to the market. It's a complete system. I think, do you have any video that you can share to our listeners, like how meticulously they're taken care of? I hope you can make one and then we can just show everybody. Yeah, let me know if you make one. So, by the way, so tuna is auctioned at fish markets, like most famously at the world's biggest fish market, again, at Toyosu in Tokyo. So could you tell us how the tuna auction works?
Okay, so every morning, like Toyosu market has a tuna auction, as you know. So, so many, and some small market in Japan have auction as well. So each style is different. It is very interesting, I think. So the New Year auction makes headline every time because of high price. But that dramatic price is it's only once a year. It's like a show. So the usual auction is every day. Looks like a routine. So Japanese fish market system is actually like very, very complicated. Even if I explain it in Japanese, it's hard to understand it. So it is like a kind of old style. So I hope somebody will install some like IT or DX or any other technology. It should be much more convenient, but it's Japanese style, I think. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So people who has who have license to be able to go to the auction floor and then they just traditionally they scream, get the price and get the best one and then just get the what they want. Is that as simple as that?
Yeah, actually, like, you need the right, you need a license to buy, to join the auction in market. So you have to buy from the like middleman in the market. That's a Japanese style, but it's much more complicated to explain in detail.
Right. So who can buy that? Who can get the license? Like, if I wanted to become a tuna merchant, can I get the license?
I don't think so. It's kind of difficult to get it.
Wow. Oh, so you need to know the right people and something like that. Wow. Okay. So there is a some obstacle for outsiders to go in. So that's maybe one of the reasons that tradition remains untouched. But okay. So do you know how many people have licenses?
In Toyosu or?
Let's say Toyosu.
Toyosu, I'm not sure, but like more than like there are 300 or something. But in Misaki now we have 100 license right now.
Okay. Right. Interesting. Okay. So by the way, you used the, you know, the word mekiki a couple of times. So so that's a keyword at the auction, right? So that means that mekiki is that the kind of a capability or the criteria to select the best. It's not just for tuna, but something valuable. You need the mekiki, like a skills to evaluate and what's right, what's wrong. So how do you select tuna? What kind of mekiki technique?
So usually we tell fish by tail cut. So we can know its color, freshness, and a fat container from the tail. So if you tell it from fish tail, you should be good mekiki. And also catching area, catching weight, fish shape are criteria if it's maguro or tuna.
Right. So when you see tuna, there are some kind of markers? Is there any where it's from and the weight and how it's caught? Can you see that when you see the tuna on the floor at the auction?
Yep. So on the surface of the tuna, it's a label on it. So it says like the catching area, catching weight, the catching origin or something. You can know. But it's not so important information. So tail cut is the most important information what maguro is. So we check the always we check the tail slice, then we know the its condition of the fish.
Right. So seeing is almost everything.
right.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So for you, how long did it take to be able to see which one is good or not?
I think it takes like a couple of years if you go to market every day.
So, okay. And now you export tuna to 15 countries, including the USA and Asia. Mm-hmm. So is tuna becoming more popular globally? And if so, why is that?
Okay. So now there are so many Japanese food restaurants all over the world. And also they are increasing. They are still increasing. So the quality of Japanese restaurant in foreign countries is getting better. And the chef's skill is getting better as well. So everybody is asking for higher quality material. So that's why Japan's maguro is growing globally. So, but actually, you know, so you can find good quality maguro not only from Japan, but also from Spain, Mexico, and Boston or something. So they go directly to consumption place from origin place. I mean, maguro become a global food, but I'm pretty sure like that making skill is more needed for better maguro.
Right. Okay. So now let's talk about sustainability. So sustainability is a major topic nowadays, and in particular, seafood is often a big agenda. What is happening in the supply and demand of tuna right now? Any trends over the last 10, 20 years?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I believe that sustainability is the most important for all stakeholders globally. So Wu Misaki Megumi thinks this is a super hot agenda as well. So I'm not like a scientist. I'm not sure what is exactly happening in the sea, but I think maguro is decreasing in some places, but increasing in the other places. For example, in Atlantic Ocean, I heard there are so many bluefin found in the catching season from fishery side, and the scientists agree with it. But I think it's because of strict catching rules. But I'm not sure if bluefin in the Pacific Ocean is increasing. There is no evidence that bluefin in Pacific Ocean is increasing. So something happening in the big eye yellowfin. Well, same thing happening in the big eye yellowfin. I mean, it's up to the area. So southern bluefin is increasing for sure. This is because of strict catching rule in south as well. So I can say all maguro are not in red list right now. We must choose a good fish. I mean, both of distributors and consumers. So also like MSC certification is one of the choice, but non-MSC fish are not altogether bad. And the MSC is costing us too much money right now. So fortunately, maguro has a big, like some life force. So, for example, in bluefin in Atlantic Ocean and the southern bluefin in South, both fishes increased for sure in the last 5 years once you follow the rules.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I found the data that, you know, the world catch of tuna since 1980s has tripled. So, obviously, you know, the tuna consumption is increasing. And like we talked earlier, sushi restaurants are becoming more popular. And then naturally people eat a lot more tuna. But it's interesting, right? It depends on which regions. And it really reflects the regulations of the certain government or certification organization. So, okay. And then you are aiming to be the most sustainable tuna purveyor in the world. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what is your philosophy of sustainability?
Okay. So we don't sell small maguro less than like 20 pounds. And also we don't buy maguro caught by processing. So this is not only for sustainability, but also it has a quality issues. I think the combination of the good quality and the good sustainability must go to the good maguro. And some people may boycott eating them for sustainability, but I don't think this is the best solution. So continuously eating good fish means the true good, the best sustainability. So that's why we distributors, the middlemen, we have to choose and distribute good fish to consumers. So actually, nobody knows what exactly happening in the sea, but we have to be chosen by customers and the fishermen. So building up the reliable, sustainable chain must be necessary for the future.
Right. So, yeah, you said, you know, there are certain ways to catch fish, like what you mentioned, the purse seining and or round hole seining. It's like really like a big net captures a lot of other fish, and then it's not sustainable because there's so many bycatch. Mm-hmm. And well, that's one thing. But yeah, it's almost like, well, so let's see. If you just stop eating tuna, and then there's a whole food chain. So what tuna used to eat more fish, and then that smaller fish is going to be in trouble because they are all eaten. So it's like a whole balanced food chain is going to collapse. So it's very myopic to say, well, let's just not eat tuna, which is not good. So what we should do is more responsible eating. So one chef I know, he's a very Japanese traditional chef, and he had a restaurant, and he's a Michelin star restaurant. He closed, but so one customer came to the restaurant, and he said, "Give me all tuna possible," and he kicked out the customer because it's not responsible, it's not respectful to other customers, and you can't just do that. It's almost like a give me all the caviar possible because I want to eat it before it's gone. So that kind of mindset is very not sustainable. And I think we all should have good sense of enjoyment and also responsible for what we are surrounded by, which is called nature. So yeah, I like the way you think about consuming fish. So you also mentioned, now, luckily, farmed tuna is more available in the market. So do you know what the percentage is of farmed fish?
So actually, I don't know exactly number, but actually, like, farmed bluefin is very popular in Japan, the Mediterranean, and Mexico. Also, Australia is farming southern bluefin. So I don't know exact number, but in bluefin, I feel more than, like, 50% is a farmed one. So also in Japan, wildlife circle farming is getting popular. I mean, it is farmed from eggs. So also, farming bluefin is another issue, which is the feed. The main feed of farming bluefin is the small fish. So nowadays, the price of the small fish is getting higher, and it's difficult to catch a lot. So you need 10 pounds feed to increase 1 pound. So almost 10 times. So bluefin is increasing while small fish may decrease. So pellet feeding is getting popular, but it still has a problem with the fish quality. So anyways, so farming is not so difficult now, getting popular right now, but there are still some problems.
Right, so farming is not a solution, but considering, again, the food chain, we need to think about the better way, which I think I see in New York, for example, there are many Japanese traditionally trained chefs who try to discover more local fish that could be very tasty, just not introduced enough to general consumers, mm-hmm. like tuna mm-hmm. or salmon. So, yeah, I hope that those efforts can be more mainstream, and a lot of global sushi chefs try to find something locally really delicious. And that sounds like the most reasonable, like thoughtful solution for the fish consumption.
Right.
Okay. All right. So let's see. You have many questions, but one of them is you have a unique sustainability project called mm-hmm. Maguro Tenki, or Tuna Electricity, with your wife, Haruka Ishibashi. Mm-hmm. So yeah. What is it?
Okay. Actually, like, Maguro Denki means Maguro Electric in English. So I guess it sounds funny, but we are serious. So as I explained, mostly our Maguro is super frozen. So those Maguro are from all over the world. So we grow them, we process them, and we keep them at a super frozen temperature. So then we distribute it to all over Japan and all over the world right now. So can you imagine how we consume energy and produce CO gas? So I think our activity must be sustainable as well. So we would like not to stop our activity, but we would like to choose another way. So that is why we will change our energy source to renewable energy by 2025, so which is RE100. So I hope our RE100 declaration would change all seafood distribution. As I said, nobody knows exactly what is happening in the sea or how much maguro is in sea. So increasing or decreasing, nobody knows. So, but it's not so difficult to know how much we produce CO gas from buying to selling. So we need to offset them. So also, this action should expand to others. That is why we started to sell renewable energy to other seafood stakeholders. So this is Maguro Denki project. So actually, we do not produce energy yet. So we currently buy renewable energy from the generators. So, but we would start generate renewable energy in your future to use our super frozen and sell to others. That's Maguro Denki project.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, very impressive. Yeah, and so it's funny, I was reading your website and happened to be in Japanese, but your wife is very forward-minded. Mm-hmm. And I heard you grow chicken in your yard.
Right.
And then you have whole energy, you have a solar system for your house. So you're really practicing from the grassroots. So yeah, it's a really respect what you're doing and your wife as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, okay, but I really hope that you're going to keep that Maguro Denki project going, and please keep me posted. Yeah. And so what are your plans and dreams?
Dreams, okay. So one of our visions is fish food culture to next generation. So we have to do many things to be done. So it's like a sustainability, energy, and the food education. And there are many things we have to consider. So I would like people all over the world to enjoy fish culture more. So to enjoy fish food culture, what we would like to do. So enjoying fish, yeah.
That's right, and sustainably.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I really think that what you're doing is very forward-minded, and it's very important considering how much tuna we are eating, or I would say maguro and tuna both. So yeah, so good luck, and where can we find your updates online and social media, and also how can we order your fish from your website?
we have our online site, but we can export directly to consumers in the United States. We are trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come to Japan, you can eat our maguro in our restaurant, and also you can order by website if you live in Japan.
Mm. Like, okay, well, we have listeners in 190 countries. I'm proud when you say that. So,
nice.
Yeah, so someone wants to have your tuna, maybe they can send you a request if they are not within the scope of export right now. So is the website www.misaki-megumi.co.jp? Okay, so it's misaki-megumi.co.jp. Right. Co.jp.
JP. Right. So also we have a Facebook page and Instagram. So you can you can research.
Right. So Instagram, the Misaki Megumi. So again, it's MISAKI-MEGUMI. Right. Okay. So wow, that's exciting. So good luck and thank you for joining us today, Masami-san.
Thank you. Thank you. ありがとうございます。
ありがとうございます。So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spengen, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.